Every day we're on the ground is another day we know that ISIS-K is seeking to target the airport and attack both U.S. and allied forces and innocent civilians.
The U.S. president says that is why the August 31st deadline stands. It's Thursday, August 26th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, what is next for Afghanistan? The World Food Program wants millions to purchase food for millions of Afghans. The vice president's Asian trip is delayed, a drop in the effectiveness in U.S. COVID vaccines. It is all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden said Tuesday the United States will complete its mission of evacuating Americans and Afghans from Afghanistan by the August 31st deadline. While the pace of evacuations has accelerated, U.S. lawmakers remain concerned about the threat posed by the Taliban and Islamic State in Khorasan and by the lack of U.S. preparation for the chaos unfolding in Kabul. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
Evacuations at Kabul airport accelerating as the August 31st deadline for a complete U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan draws near. The White House saying the U.S. is on track to meet that crucial deadline. President Joe Biden.
Every day we're on the ground is another day we know that ISIS-K is seeking to target the airport and attack both U.S. and allied forces and innocent civilians.
That announcement coming after the Taliban said they would not negotiate with the U.S. to extend the deadline. Zabihullah Mujahideen, Taliban spokesman.
We convey again a message to the Americans to withdraw all their citizens in the given time frame. They have the facilities, airplanes are available, and they have control of the airport. They should evacuate all their forces and all their related contractors.
The White House clarifying that evacuations will need to stop before August 31st. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
There would need to be time to wind down the presence.
The Pentagon saying it will need several days to remove U.S. personnel and equipment. The administration says there is still enough time to complete the mission of evacuating all Americans and eligible Afghans. In total, more than 70,000 individuals have already been evacuated, the largest such operation in U.S. history. Major General Hank Taylor.
This tremendous display of teamwork and focus resulted in a passenger count of 21,600 individuals leaving Afghanistan in just 24 hours.
But U.S. lawmakers are already reviewing the reasons the Afghan government collapsed so quickly, leading to that chaotic evacuation. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Representative Adam Schiff.
There were any number of warnings that the Taliban might take over, and some that included the potential of a very rapid takeover. At the same time, though, I think it's also fair to say that no one predicted such a rapid collapse, a rapid and complete collapse of the Afghan government and forces.
Capitol Hill Republicans say White House officials should resign for failing to predict the collapse and plan for an evacuation. Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene.
This was Joe Biden's fault, Kamala Harris's fault, and all of his administration and those in charge. Their plan to withdraw was completely irresponsible. They had the information, and they knew what they were going to do was going to create this crisis.
Both Democrats and Republicans remain doubtful of the White House claim that the U.S. can complete the evacuation in time and have called on President Biden to extend it. The White House said Thursday it has contingency plans in place in case the evacuations need to continue into September. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
We continue on VOA Asia. While much of the focus in Afghanistan during the past week has been on evacuation efforts from Kabul's international airport, what about the country as a whole? For that discussion and more, VOA Steve Miller spoke with Ted Galen Carpenter, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute in Washington.
I think there's been a resistance to any kind of firm central control in Afghanistan for a very long time. This goes back to generations, if not centuries. Tribal loyalties, clan loyalties are still much more important than any sense of national identity. And this may cause at least some problem for the Taliban going forward. Indeed, there are signs that ethnic-oriented resistance is resuming in the north of the country already. So this sense that the Taliban controls every square meter of the country is erroneous.
I wanted to ask you about the challenges facing the Taliban as they form, as they term it, the inclusive Islamic government. You mentioned the ethnic resistance in the north. What challenges do you see them trying to bring together, you know, a ruling coalition to form their new government?
Well, any central government in Afghanistan has always been akin to trying to herd cats, given the multitude of ethnic, religious, and tribal factions in the country. In addition, the U.S. Occupation certainly has had an effect on the country. There are portions of Afghanistan's population that like the idea of modernization, that are not going to be happy at all about going back and living under Sharia law. I think the Taliban may find that either it has to get extremely repressive or it needs to make accommodations, at least to a limited extent, with groups that are not going to be happy with the idea of a highly religious conservative rule. We'll see how that goes. Afghanistan should not be a high priority for the United States in any case. You know, this nation-building experiment was ill-advised from the very beginning. It was doomed from the very beginning. And the United States needs now to focus on real, serious security issues around the world in places like East Asia, not South Central Asia.
So moving forward, as someone who pays a great deal of attention to this particular corner of it, what are you keenly watching to see how things progress, whether they improve or they become a more destabilizing factor?
There'll be two things to watch. One would be the internal developments in Afghanistan. Is there going to be a measure of stability? If so, what kind? Will we see civil war, perhaps involving multiple factions, take place? Could Afghanistan become another Somalia or another Libya? And that's certainly a possibility. The other thing to watch is the reaction of the regional powers. Russia, China, Tajikistan, and a good many other countries, Iran, are looking carefully at Afghanistan. And it is very much in their interest not to have Afghanistan become a terrorist haven, not to become a cauldron of instability. So what we're going to see is regional geopolitics resume with the United States largely out of the picture. And in other words, that portion of the international system returning to some semblance of normal rather than seeing this system of U.S. domination, which is what we've seen over the last two decades.
VOA Steve Miller is speaking with Ted Galen Carpenter, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. The World Food Program is urgently appealing for $200 million to purchase and pre-position food for millions of Afghanistans before the winter snows cut off access roads to them. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Sizzling summer temperatures of more than 30 degrees Celsius mask the hardships that lie ahead for the Afghan people during the bitterly cold winter season that soon will be upon them. Summer is the time of year when the World Food Program prepositions food stocks in warehouses and with communities across Afghanistan. The food is then distributed to needy people before access to them is cut off by the brutal winter snows. WFP Deputy Regional Director Anthea Webb warns of a humanitarian catastrophe this winter without international support for this emergency operation.
With funding levels tight and needs escalating, we risk running out of our core supply, wheat flour, come October. We only have a few short weeks left to secure the necessary donor funding to get food in place before the mountain passes are blocked by snow. Any further delay in our preparations could be deadly for the people of Afghanistan.
Once the snow sets in, Webb says it is too late to help communities that will be completely cut off from outside assistance. This hunger crisis comes on top of a wider humanitarian and human rights crisis triggered by the withdrawal of U.S. and NATO troops and the seizure of control of the country by Taliban insurgents. The United Nations reports some 18 million Afghans depend on international aid for survival. Getting that aid into the country during this turbulent period is becoming increasingly difficult as commercial aircraft are unable to land at Kabul airport. Webb acknowledges the challenges this year are more complex. She says a severe drought, conflict, and the impact of COVID-19 are making it more difficult to make even the most basic preparations for winter.
We know how to prevent a hunger emergency despite the current challenges. Over the past tumultuous week, WFP reached 80,000 people across Afghanistan, notwithstanding the difficulties. That's in addition to the more than 5 million people we've already helped since the beginning of the year.
Webb notes WFP has worked in Afghanistan since 1963, including under the previous Taliban rule. She says WFP has been able to bring 600 metric tons of food and 60 new trucks into Afghanistan this week alone. She adds her agency is ready to scale up aid and ensure families have what they need to survive the harsh winter if it receives the necessary funding. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. officials are continuing to investigate two possible cases of so-called Havana syndrome health incidents that delayed Vice President Kamala Harris's trip from Singapore to Vietnam. The investigation was in its early stages, and officials deemed it safe for Harris to make her scheduled stop in Vietnam after initially hitting pause on Tuesday. Harris's trip across Asia is meant to reassure allies about American foreign policy amid the tumultuous evacuation from Afghanistan. The Havana syndrome is the name for a rash of mysterious health incidents first reported by American diplomats and other government employees in the Cuban capital beginning in 2016. As we continue on VOA Asia, a study by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows the effectiveness of both the Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines against the highly contagious Delta variant dropped from 91% to 66%. Both vaccines were developed using innovative messenger RNA technology. The U.S. pharmaceutical company Johnson & Johnson announced Wednesday that clinical trials it is conducting show a second shot of that company's COVID-19 vaccine produced an antibody response 9 times higher than the original single dose. As Thailand struggles with its worst coronavirus outbreak yet, researchers in the country have developed a machine to draw out COVID-19 vaccine doses more efficiently and optimize lower than expected supplies. Reuters reporter Olivia Chan has the story.
Thai researchers have developed a machine with a robotic arm that can extract COVID-19 vaccine doses more efficiently. They hope it will help with the country's lower-than-anticipated vaccine supply. The Autovac system uses the arm to draw 12 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine from a vial in 4 minutes. That's up from the standard 10 to 11 doses drawn manually, as shown on the vial labels. The extra 20% could mean more people can get inoculated. So far, only about 9% of Thailand's population have been fully vaccinated. The prototype machine costs over $76,000, and it only works on AstraZeneca multi-dose vials currently.
Olivia Chan reporting. Thank you for being with us. Our thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Kate Lane, Amy Heibels, Chris Cascayo, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Stay safe and enjoy the day.